Hey guys, welcome to my podcast channel. Today is a very special day. I'm very glad to have my good friend Salty with me. So, hi Salty.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Yourself, man?
Oh, it's a beautiful rainy day here.
So today we're gonna have Salty on the podcast. I'm very glad to have you, man. Since I thought of recording some podcasts and doing these things, I always thought that it's going to be very interesting to have someone with me, and I always thought of you might be the best person to record my first podcast. So I'm very, very happy you were able to make it.
Oh, thank you for asking me, man. It's a real honor.
Cool. So today, guys, we're going to talk about what we like the most with Salty is hiking, any outdoor stuff. And what it takes to go for a hike and long distance hiking and all of these kind of things. So yeah, just quickly, maybe Salty, you can introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Matt Robbins, or as I'm affectionately known on trail as Salty. I'm a former United States Marine infantryman, and I am a Triple Crown thru hiker.
Cool. So yeah, this guy has a lot of experience on the trail. And yeah, we're gonna cover that together. So yeah, I'm very happy to have you for the very first interview. And that was also important for me to give the chance to some other hikers to give their opinion on what is hiking for them, what it means. And I think since you have a lot of experience, like you just said, you just completed your Triple Crown. Finishing the CDT last summer, so that's gonna be a good thing for you. So yeah, just can you tell us what kind of trails did you do and these kind of things?
So I've done a lot of different trails. The big three I've done are the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. That's what makes up the Triple Crown. But I've done a lot of shorter hikes too. I lived in Montana for about 5 years going to college, and I did a lot of hiking there in the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And yeah, I just love being out there.
All right, cool. Yeah. So you did like the 80 first and then the PCT and you finished by the CDT. Did you make it like in this order, like because like in this sequence for a specific reason, or you just ended up like having the chance to do the 80 first and then you continued doing the PCT and finally the CDT? Or was it a proper plan for you to do it in this sequence or not
No,
specifically?
when I started, I didn't know even if I could thru hike. It seemed like a huge, huge undertaking to me. And I attempted the AT twice before I actually completed it. I failed it twice, or failed it. You don't really fail it, but you learn from it. I got out of the Marine Corps in 2012, and that winter I got on the Appalachian Trail. I needed to get away for a little while. I needed to kind of decompress from my experience in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I got on the Appalachian Trail, and I made it about 400 or 500 miles. Ended up meeting some people and made friends, and ended up going to Michigan, and ended up doing all sorts of other things besides hiking. I just kind of wanted the experience to go where it was going to take me. And then I got off the trail, and I got back to Alabama. It's where I'm originally from. And I just got extraordinarily bored again. I needed to do something. The Marine Corps always had me busy, and I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had gotten a couple different jobs, and none of them were really working out for me. And so I got back on the Appalachian Trail, started all over again, and I started in the middle of an ice storm, which was extremely dumb. But when I got off of that trail that time, I came back, and I had gotten some mail, and I had gotten accepted to college. And so I was in college for a couple of years, and what I was in a lot of fighting in Afghanistan, and that really took a toll on me, but I didn't know how much of a toll it took until I'd been out a few years. And I'd been in college, and I needed a break. Like, I needed to get away from society for a bit. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go hike the Appalachian Trail. I've attempted it twice. I'm gonna go do it, and I'm gonna do it now.
All
And
right.
I started planning. And then afterwards, I was like, okay, I'm going to get, I did that and it was amazing and I loved being out there. And so I'm going to go try the Pacific Crest Trail. So in 2017, I got northbound on the PCT and I failed it again. I did 1,000 miles. I made it into the Sierra, and that was a really, really big snow year for the PCT. And so, yeah, it was a huge, gnarly, like people were dying and stuff in the Sierra. No, scary. Yeah, it was very scary. And I made it over Forester Pass and I made it to Kearsarge Pass in the Sierra. And, you know, the snow was way more than I'd ever imagined. It was overwhelming. It was definitely scary. And I got very intimidated by it. And so I decided I was done. I got off trail, made it down into Lone Pine, California.
All right.
Down there with another hiker who I'd been hiking with. And he was dead set on going back up into the Sierra. And I just wasn't trying. He tried convincing me. We ended up sitting in Lone Pine for a couple of days while I tried to get my courage back up. And I wasn't having it. And I ended up flipping to the middle and tried to continue going north from the middle. But the flip just didn't work out for me. Flipping is very mentally taxing for me. I don't know if it's like that for everybody, but I just don't enjoy it.
Okay.
So I ended up getting off again, went back to Montana, finished my degree. And when I finished, I spent all my downtime wanting to get back to the Pacific Crest Trail. I loved it out there. and like I had really fallen in love with through hiking and like that had became my major focus. So I planned a SOBO for right after I graduated, and I basically had it all worked out, and I got on trail shortly thereafter, and never looked back. Had a great time, met you.
Yeah.
I came back home after doing that, and sat around, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do the CDT. Like I was like, you know, I know I can do it. It's just a matter of getting out there and trying. And I originally attempted NOBO, and because of the late snow season, I ended up having to flip there. But it wasn't nearly as bad as it was on the PCT. I'd kind of accepted the flip because of the snow.
Okay, cool. What? So that was basically that was a long process, like because like. Even though like it's pretty hard for people who are just like starting long distance and they can see that Triple Crown as a huge goal and target in their life, listening to you, like it takes a couple of, you know, tries and things like you said you are trying and then you learn things and then you come back and you try again. And finally, you make it, right?
Yeah.
So, because some of the people, like, you know, when you hear about the Triple Crown, you can, I mean, I don't know about you, but I heard, like, maybe the 80 was the easiest. But, like, it's tough. I mean, like, in from some other hikers, starting with the 80 is not that easy because of the elevation and constant up and downs and stuff like that. Can you tell us more about, the, like, what the people think the 80 is easier, maybe?
I think people get this idea that the AT is easier because it's shorter and it's overcrowded. A lot of people attempt the Appalachian Trail every year. A lot of people, like thousands of people, attempt the Appalachian Trail every year.
Okay.
And there, you know, there's a lot of success stories and a lot of failures. But I personally think the Appalachian Trail may be the hardest out of all three.
Okay.
The Continental Divide Trail was difficult. But what made it difficult was the unknowns. Like there was, it's definitely wild. And there's a lot of times when the trail just disappears, especially in the Great Basin. You have to know how to navigate. And when I started the Appalachian Trail, I mean, I had some experience navigating, and I had a lot of experience just living in the wilds from being in the military. But I did not have the experiences that I needed in order to jump right on the Continental Divide Trail.
Okay. Yeah, that's why like the CDT, like most of the hikers who try to, are attempting the CDT, you know, usually it's like it's the second or the third one, right? It's pretty rare to get someone who's going to start long distance right with the CDT.
Yeah, it's becoming a bigger trend I see with people attempting to start their triple or, you know, even just try their first through hike with the CDT. I met some of those folks down in the South when I started it, and mm-hmm. Those people didn't make it out of the Boo Hill of New Mexico. You know, I hate to say it, but you see a lot of these people come out there and they copied some gear list that they saw on YouTube, or they overpack and they're not in shape and they don't really have the mental attitude that you need to successfully do a through hike. They just think they're going to wing it, and they get out there and that trail will toss you and turn you. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot. Like, yeah, nature is way too strong on the CDT, I think. So,
yeah.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, this is why also I'm doing this kind of podcast and stuff like that, because I get asked a lot of questions about my friends who they really like going for a hike for a day or two, but they always have questions about what does it take and what are the risks, and is it very risky to go for a long distance and stuff like that, and you know, what kind of gear do you need, what is the food resupply, what is the, you know, like mentally, what do you go through, and all of these questions. And I want to do this podcast, and this is why also I'm very glad to have you today on the podcast, is because like you can tell people that, yeah, like guys, like it's so much fun to go outside and hike, but there are some risky things, and to take into consideration, and you have to be very careful on some of the things, and like you maybe need to go step by step and try to learn things, and it's okay if you, I mean, we live in a society like failing is not an option, but you know, it's okay to go and kind of stop before what you thought that might be the end, and then starting again the next year and trying to build up your, I mean, some kind of experience and training on the trail. And it's pretty hard to learn unless you do it and you just go on the trail and try, like, I mean, there are many topics like that. I'm just thinking about, like, how do you eat and how do you, what kind of your appetite and these kind of things, you know. Unless you go for 2 months of hiking, it's pretty hard to replicate that thing in your daily life, right?
Yeah, I think for 2 weeks. If you can go for 2 weeks,
yeah,
you can get it. Like, for me, it's always a two-week mental hurdle when I first get on trail.
Okay.
When I first get on trail, it takes me a second to get within myself and just get in the rhythm of what I'm doing.
Okay.
But 2 weeks into it, almost every single time, 2 weeks into it, I'm ready to roll. Like I'm mentally there and I'm loving every second of what I'm doing.
Okay. It's just a routine. I mean, your body understood that there was like a daily thing to do 26 miles a day or even plus sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, so 2 weeks, and I mean, body wise also, you know, blisters and stuff, like sometimes it gets like your trail legs and your body get used. And after like 10, 15 days, 2 weeks, you feel like in a good shape to continue just to roll out.
Yep.
So I think this is why also it's a good thing to hear from you and your experience. So this is a good thing. And I mean, that brings me to the second thing that I wanted to talk is like, how do you train, and do you have any suggestion, like just to how to be in shape and to hit the starting date, to be like in a good position that you're not gonna go through like 2 weeks is gonna be just a disaster. You know, that's gonna be a challenge. Yes, like you just said.
Yeah.
Well, how do you do that thing? What do you recommend? Like, how do you do it for yourself?
You know, there's really only one way to get in shape for hiking, and that's to hike. You need to load your backpack down with I overload it. I put a 7 to 9 day food carry in my bag, or what the equivalent weight would be, and like I'll just go for short day hikes with that pack.
Okay.
You know, for me, it's not so much about the physical abilities, because I know I can physically do it. It's mental. And everything that I'm doing is a mental hurdle when I'm out there. You know, when you've been alone for 3 or 4 weeks, and, you know, on the CDT especially, you know, going through the Great Basin, I was running through that. I was having a great time. I was doing 40-mile days.
Wow.
But I didn't see a single person. You know, I didn't see a single person the whole time I was out there. And you really have to get within yourself and listen to your own thoughts, and you have to be comfortable with yourself to do it. I think, you know, because of social media and because of our, you know, modern culture, we're so used to constantly having someone there to talk to, or constantly having someone to back our ideas, or, you know, validate us in some way. That's partially the reason I love through hiking, because I don't necessarily feel like I need that all the time, and I want to get away from that part of our culture. But you see people on the Pacific Crest Trail who they'll quickly join a trail family, and that trail, and they'll try and stick with those people the entire time. And they're really, in my opinion, they're really destroying their own hike, because they're no longer hiking their hike. They're hiking the group's hike. And what the group wants to do is what they're going to do, as opposed to taking that time and really, really embracing yourself and really, what is it you want to do? Do you want to go see that waterfall? Do you want to go over there and take that side trail for a second? You know, do you want to sit here and enjoy the sunset? You know, what do you want to do? And it, you know, through hiking is a selfish pursuit. And I think that's what it's meant to be. It's, when I was on the Appalachian Trail, I met a man who, he put it into perspective for me. He said he was a trail angel, and he'd set up a hostel near the Appalachian Trail in Maine. And he equated through hiking to a pilgrimage. He said he believed it was the closest thing that Americans would ever get to a spiritual pilgrimage. And I can definitely relate to that. To me, it's a spiritual thing.
Yeah. Hello?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yeah. Sorry. You can't hear me.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as training goes, you just need to have the mindset. That's, if you have the mindset, you can physically do it. And even if you don't have the time to train, start slow. Start out with 10 to 15 mile days.
Yeah.
There's no deadline. You're not out there to race. And you can steadily build up. You know, I didn't start the Continental Divide Trail doing 40 mile days. I started doing 20s, and then built up to 30s and maintained to that until I was getting close to the end.
Hello, Salty?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I cut a little bit. It's all right. Yeah, go on.
I mean, that's it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and this is why maybe, like, some people, and when you think about the PCT, I'm talking about the PCT because obviously I spent a lot of time in 2017 before my through hike to get, like, reading a lot of blogs and stuff. And this is why maybe like most of the people historically are doing the PCT Nobo, because in the desert you can build up and you can do 15, 17, 18, 20, and then you can go on. And the time you get to the Sierra, you can easily, I mean, you lost some weight, you got your trail legs, and you got used to your diet and stuff like that. And then maybe you can easily do that, I mean, like 25 or 30 miles a day. And this is why maybe like on the PCT, people are feel more comfortable starting Nobo. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I think you're probably right. I also think people get it in their head that that's the right way, you know, north. It kind of works out with, you know, it's right after the holidays. People always have their stuff ready. And
true. It's
normally right after graduations, and so like it just kind of works out for people to go Nobo as far as like a daily life schedule.
Yeah, the calendar, yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, the Pacific Crest Trail, I started at Nobo, and when I ended up completing it, I went south, and I loved it going south. It was so starkly different from seeing it northbound, seeing all that snow, to just having, you know, a beautiful trail in sections that I was absolutely miserable in when I first tried it. You know, I wouldn't necessarily think that there's a right way or wrong way to do it through hike. You know, everybody needs to go out there and do what's right for them. You know, there's no right or wrong way. The only wrong way would be to hitchhike around and take photos and say you did it on social media.
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree with you.
You know, that's like, you go out there to hike, you should be hiking. You know,
you should be hiking all the way.
Hitting, even if there's a road walk. Like, I hate to say it, you need to walk it.
True. As much as you can, right? Like, there are like a lot of forest fires and stuff like that every year, and some people they're skipping sections, and this is okay. But yeah, for me, when I did it as well, I tried to do as much as I could, you know, just hiking, because the concept for me was just to connect the two borders in the U.S.
Yep.
And that was just to tag like Canada to Mexico, just walking, just like, wow. I was mentally, that was good. So, but that's a good thing. Yeah, maybe this is why historically also people are doing it Nobo, and maybe it's a little bit different with the CDT. I don't know about the AT, but it's a little bit different with the CDT, because I think most of the people who are attending the CDT are experienced hiker, and it doesn't really matter that, you know, which way they're doing it, and they are not expecting to go with the trail family. I think it's mostly single hikers, solo hikers, right?
I saw a lot of couples out on the CDT. But that was, they were few and far between. Most of the people, and you also have to remember, there's not a lot of people that are attempting the CDT each year.
True.
Which is a wonderful thing, because you get to a sense of the trail by yourself. You get to experience it, a very, very beautiful trail, very brutal trail. When they say embrace the brutality, they mean it. Okay. But you get to experience that self-realization of yourself, you know, the moments when you feel like you just can't go on and you've got to make yourself do it. Like, you're going to get that on the CDT for sure. But I think most people I've met out there, like I hiked with some people from time to time, but the majority of the people I met were trying to be out there by themselves. They wanted that space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very understanding. Even the people that I did hike with for periods of time, like, we would go our own way during the middle of the day. And I think it was just kind of unspoken that that's what we both wanted.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I see that. But that's very, like, that's very funny, because I thought, like, when I went through the type of question we were like going to cover on that podcast, I was thinking about, you know, what kind of things you prefer about hiking. And if I listen since the beginning of the podcast, is you mentioned that is good, and I share that thing with you. Definitely, I love to hike by myself, but also it's pretty hard to hike by yourself because you feel alone, right? Don't you find that things like, it's weird, right? Like, to be by yourself and challenge you mentally that you can do it, and fight against yourself, like, because you just feel alone. But in the meantime, this is what you're looking for.
Yeah. You know, I'm the type of guy, like, I care about people. And so when I'm hiking with other people, and, like, I show up to camp and they don't show up, I worry.
And that's
something that I think a lot of people don't consider, unless they're going out there with a partner, you know, and they're always hiking with that person, you know, then they may consider, you know, that person's safety. But, you know, when you meet somebody in the middle of the day, or, and you've been hiking kind of on and off for a couple of days, and you guys say, hey, I'm going to go to here tonight, you want to meet up, and they don't show up.
Not true.
That's stressful. And that's exactly what I'm going out there to avoid. That being said, it doesn't mean I don't mind hiking with people. I do. I like all the people. I met you out there. You know, I like meeting all the thru hikers. You know, it's one of the few times in my life where I meet people with such common interests and common lifestyles that we just immediately click. You know, you become very close friends very quickly out there. They say a day on trail is like 2 years of a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's one of those things where you have to consider, you know, if you're hiking with somebody, your actions are going to affect that person. And is that something you want to do? Do you want to affect that person's hike? Because, you know, a thru hike is a monumentous accomplishment in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you do it two or three times, you're going to remember every single step you take for the most part, every big experience. And if somebody affects you in an emotional way out there, you're going to remember it forever.
True. No, that thing. And you have to deal so much. I mean, just with yourself, you have to do a lot for yourself, and because you're going through so much, like, up and downs mentally, and you think, like, one day is just the perfect day and you have no idea why. And the following day, it's just a disaster, like, that nothing is working, like, properly mentally. You're just having, like, not a good day. And if you have to take care of somebody else on top of that, it's a lot. And, like, people have to understand also that when you go for a section between two resupply points, like, I mean, sometimes as an average is going to be what, like, 6-7 days, let's say. Sometimes it's a little bit less, but like 7 days of 30 miles hiking every day, it's a lot of hiking. and just hiking, like, because basically it's what? It's like hiking 12 hours a day, sleeping 9, putting up camp and eating something, and then you just up to 24 hours and you keep going the following day.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to do just being by yourself and managing yourself. And if you have to, on top of that, to deal with someone, and one day you're good and the other one is not, and the opposite, it's tough. Yeah. So that's something to consider if people are listening to that podcast and they want to go for a through hike, you know, like as a couple, it's a total different hike, right? Hiking with someone and just by yourself. It's okay to go having a friend.
You just have to realize that you're no longer hiking your hike. You're hiking y'all's hike, you know, the couple hike. It's, you know, you see that with people who hike with their animals, who hike with dogs or even cats. Like, you're not hiking your hike anymore. You're hiking that dog's hike because you got to care for that dog the whole time.
Yeah. Ah, true. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. All right. That's a good thing. And I wanted to talk about also, you know, if you go a little bit deeper on the your gear and stuff, like, what do you like the most in your backpack? Like, things you will never trade away.
You know, I love experimenting with new gear. Okay. I'm definitely a gear nerd. I've tried all sorts of stuff. You know, I had a pretty good foundation for gear. I grew up hiking. You know, I my first backpack was a big external frame. I still have it.
You can't, wow.
It's huge. The pack alone weighs like 7 pounds. And then, you know, and I remember going into thinking I needed to carry, like, I remember like reading a Boy Scout manual, and like there was a list of things you had to have, and I love lists. And I remember reading that list and thinking, I've got to have all of this if I'm going to survive in the woods.
Oh my God.
Then I remember like being 12 years old and like having this whole like 50-pound bag.
Oh my God.
And I'm only going out for like 2 days. And so, like, I quickly learned that it's doable, but you will be miserable. And
all right.
You're not nearly going to enjoy yourself. And then, you know, when I was in the military, I had to carry all sorts of stuff. And for a period of time when I was in the Marines, I was a radio guy. I carried a big 24-pound radio. And that radio was a huge – I mean, it was my job. It was very, very important for the survivability of us as a unit. And so I had to kind of tailor my survival gear, if you will, like the things I would be using to sleep with and the things that I would be using for everyday life to a bare minimum to accommodate the things I needed for combat. And so I remember like not carrying a sleeping pad. I remember just using a bivy sack and a synthetic blanket, and that's all I could pack, and like a camelback, and like taking we had, you know, the military rations, and taking those and stripping them and only taking like the foods that I know I want to eat and like the bare minimum of food that I can get by with. Taking specifically, you know, we had to move pretty quickly a lot of times, and
yeah.
Getting shot at, you got to move fast. So you learned very quickly what you really and truly need and what you don't. And so when I started getting into hiking, I took my knowledge from those experiences and put them into my backpacking gear that I bought. I was like, I need this because that's what I've always used. Well, you know, what you need for combat isn't necessarily what you need for through hiking. So I had to start tailoring my gear down. And on the Appalachian Trail, I think my base weight was like 15 or 16 pounds.
Okay.
And then my, like, I carried a lot of food and I carried a lot of books. I remember at one point I had like 7 books on the top of my pack.
Oh my God.
I would pack my bag, and then the whole top part of my backpack were books that I had collected along the way. Cause I just like, I like getting to the shelters and like waiting out rainstorms or whatever and just reading at night.
No way.
In the middle of the day, like I'd read for a little bit, and you know, it wasn't so much about the miles. I was just really happy to be there in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And like the AT, because there's not so many views, it can be very monotonous at times. But I loved being in the woods. I loved being in that eastern woodland area. I sometimes needed a commercial break from the constant trees. You know, sitting down and reading was really, really wonderful. Looking back now, I'd probably carry a Kindle or just a lot of books. When I got on the Pacific Crest Trail in 2017, I had really trimmed my pack down. I had I think it was a 10 or 11 pound base weight. And I never even the things that I trimmed down were just things that I just had and never used. I looked at a different shelter. I needed a different shelter. So I'd bought a lighter weight shelter, and I had gotten lighter without ever really trying. It was a natural evolution. Okay. And now I have a 6 pound base weight or something like that. I think right now, because I'm going to get on trail this weekend, I think it weighed in at 6.7 pounds.
Wow.
Starting out, carrying 50 pounds when I was younger to a 6 pound base weight, it's night and day. And I'm so much happier with my really light base weight. I have everything really dialed in. But I don't necessarily have a piece of gear that if something better came along, I wouldn't be willing to try out.
Okay. Because you like trying new stuff and trying to test things on your next hike.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, but to start with, just to give an idea to people who are kind of new to the hike in long distance hiking, if they listen to that thing, it's very, very hard to get to 6 pounds base weight, right?
Yeah. It took a long time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So people have to understand that thing, right? That aspect of the hike. It took you many hikes and maybe a couple of sacrifices because at the beginning, maybe you're looking at your comfort and then you can cut into that thing, right? Into comfort. So the pad, you're going to trim your pad. I don't know. You're going to get something lighter because you don't mind being, I don't know, having just a top instead of just having a proper tent or these kind of things, right?
Yep.
So the more you hike and the less you're going to just take maybe with you, or maybe some of the things you're going to realize, like you said, right? I did the entire PCT. I never used that piece of gear. So, next hike, I'm not going to take with me. So, yeah. So it takes a lot of test and try and hiking. And then one day maybe you guys are gonna just get at Salty's level 6 pounds. I can tell you. Because when you get to below 10 pounds, just gain just trying to save one single pound, it's a huge difference, right?
It is a huge difference. Experience is everything when it comes to hiking.
Exactly, right?
Experience. I love, before I was a Triple Crowner, and even now, I love meeting other hikers.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not Triple Crowners, people with experience on other trails, the Arizona Trail, the Pacific Northwest Trail. And I like seeing what they have, mm-hmm. because, what they have may not necessarily work for me. It may work for them, but it may give me an idea for something else that might work for me. Or it might for the CDT, I used wind pants. As my bottom warm layer in the rain.
Yeah.
And I hardly ever put them on. It was something that I just, because I never wanted to stop to put them on. I'd stop and pull out my rain jacket, and I'd stop and pull out my umbrella, and I just kind of never did it. So only I think once or twice did I ever put my wind pants on, just because I didn't want to try and take my shoes off. I tried to slide them over my shoes. But when it was really snowy, I appreciated having them, but I'd never really needed them. So I realized I would rather use a little rain kilt. I think that would work out better for me. And that was something I decided to switch up to. And so since I'm carrying this rain kilt, how else can I use that rain kilt now? So now I use my rain kilt as part of my shelter. I can set up my very minimal Mountain Laurel Designs monk tarp, and it's perfectly content by itself for the most part. But the way I like to set it up that gives me the most space, it's kind of open on the front, and I carry an umbrella, which I find it very, very useful. And I can pop that and cover my face. So if it's, you know, not coming down like a torrential storm, that right there is normally enough if you pay attention to where you're setting up your camp. You know, sometimes, you know, you'll show up to a campsite and that campsite is so heavily stomped down that every tent site will puddle. You know, and you look at where they're setting these, like where the Forest Service, whatever the trail crews will make these campsites, and they don't necessarily make them because they're a good spot to set up camp. They make them because they're scenic, or they make them because they're convenient. I think that, you know, as an experienced hiker, I like to stop and look for my campsites throughout the day. And if it starts getting later in the day, and I'm like, okay, I need to start winding down, then I'll start looking for a really good campsite. And set my tarp up in a direction, in a manner that is probably best if a storm did blow in. And then I can use my my kilt, and I can tie it onto my tarp. And
okay, I see.
More pieces of gear than just, you know, and then bringing a heavier tent and bringing rain pants or bringing wind pants and a kilt. You know, I've seen that a lot on the Appalachian Trail where you had people who – they would bring multiple pieces of gear that could do the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially the AT, because it's the green tunnel, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's I mean, weather can be bad, right, on the AT? Is that something you experienced?
It's, you know, I started in the AT very early. I wanted a different AT experience.
Okay. And
like I said, I was kind of like, I needed a break from society for a little bit when I got Appalachian Trail. So I started in like January. I ended up like walking into a snowstorm in the Smoky Mountains, and there was actually other people up there, which I was so surprised. And I did the Appalachian Trail with a partner at the time. And we got up in this, we decided that first night we were pushing up, that we weren't going to go completely into elevation. We were going to camp down below and let this storm kind of teeter off some and then push higher the next day. And we set up we had a tent, a full-on tent, and we set up our tent on what we thought was the last, like, good campsite before we would get to a shelter or anything. And that next morning we woke up and everything we had was soaked. Our tent itself, like, I set the tent up really well, and I took extra precautions to kind of help from getting flooded out underneath. But the tent, the seam tape delaminated on it. And I had this tent for a long time, and it wasn't something I knew to even check for. And we woke up sitting in water, and it was well below freezing outside. And we were, like, holding on to one another, shivering. And so we just needed to pack up and move, and that's what we did. And we hiked and hiked and hiked until we made it to a shelter, and I was going to try and make a fire, but like, we were both freezing, and our sleeping bags and my, were both soaked. Like, they were holding water. They were so wet.
Oh,
and
God.
We got into these, like, it was a really bad situation, and we got into the shelter, and, you know, eventually after a couple days of continual movement and continual sleeping and luckily having each other's body heat to keep each other warm, and like, some of the people we met, like, one of them had an extra tarp that we used as a blanket one night. But our stuff eventually dried out.
Wow.
That was a huge, huge learning experience for me, because I was, you know, I thought about that situation. I still think about that situation, because it could have been very deadly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And it was just a lack of experience that put me into this situation that I wasn't prepared for, really. But we got through it, and we ended up, you know, successfully hiking that trail that year. Yeah, and it was a total learning curve.
No, I bet, yeah. And this is this was something I want to cover also with you on the podcast, is like, I mean, like, hiking sounds a lot of fun for the people who've never done any long distance. But, I mean, I've only done one through hike, and you've done three, obviously, and you have a lot of experience on the three. And they are like, and this is one of my projects, is to do a couple of podcasts about, you know, the common mistakes that people are doing on the through hike. And I have a list of things, you know, and maybe, I mean, you clearly covered one, is how to choose your campsite. And this is a common mistake, like, the people are not paying attention of where they're going to sleep and how, you know, they can put the tent or the top depending on the weather, because they don't have, you know, maybe a lack of, you know, experience, and maybe they don't have that much knowledge on, you know, how can the weather can change pretty fast in the nature and stuff like that. And I wanted maybe to cover with you a couple of these common mistakes you saw, and maybe you can explain us, you know, these things. I mean, I took notes of things like, you know, that people don't know until they get on the through hike, like, you know, the town vortex, you know, how to manage that, how to manage, you know, your, how much food you're going to hit, and how, you know, depending the weeks, and what you're going to accept. If you're making resupply boxes, you know, and you are just in the comfort of your, of your apartment back in whatever, like in Montreal for me, and I pack that much food, and when I'm going to get in trail and I'm going to open the box, and I'm going to see only the peanut butter Clif bars, and I'm just fed up of these flavors and this taste.
Yeah.
And people don't get used to that thing, and they don't know until they try. And they open that box and they have to carry that thing for a week. And they say, okay, well, I'm going to have just the peanut butter and coconut and chocolate chips. And I'm just, I can't even just smell that flavor. It's I cannot even hear that things, right? And there are a lot of things. They don't take care of their body by stretching or these kind of things. I've seen quite a few common mistakes. I don't want to say that. And I don't want to teach anyone saying that I know better than anyone else. But I mean, I'm doing this podcast again also to show people that there are some risks and there are some common mistakes. And you've mentioned for me one of the top one, which is how to choose your campsite. And it takes a lot of experience. So did you see any like common mistakes and you want people to know and to be aware of your through hike? I don't know, like just maybe one or two.
There are a lot of common mistakes, beginner mistakes that I see a lot of people making, and I've seen experienced people making.
Because
you can just accept them. Like you don't necessarily, like you can, if you pack a, like an overbuilt shelter, you sleep through a storm in a bad campsite. If you're packing very minimalistically and you're trying to keep your base weight low and you're really just trying to be there in that moment, and you've got to think about those things. So if you don't necessarily have that experience, you know, you may think about not carrying that 4 ounce tarp like I do. You know, you consider like maybe you need that pound and a half tent.
Correct.
Or maybe before you get on that trail, you may try, if you think you want to try a tarp, get a good size tarp. Don't start with a tiny one and pitching it multiple different ways. You know, pay attention to the wind. Pay attention to like the ground itself. Like, does it look like an indentation? You know, setting up right below a tree, look up and look at that tree. Are those limbs hanging? Are they going to fall on you in the middle of the night if the wind starts blowing? There's a lot of things that you just got to pay attention to yourself, pay attention to your gear, and pay attention to the environment around you. Resupply though. Resupply is a huge one. I have experimented so much with resupply. On the Appalachian Trail, I did not resupply. Like, I did not send any boxes. I picked up all my food along the way. And I enjoyed that because I was able to switch things up. But it, you know, going into town and going to a grocery store, sometimes you got to hike to the grocery store. Sometimes the grocery store is like not right in town. You know, that takes time and that takes energy. And sometimes you're tired. You don't necessarily want to leave the comfort of a hotel room if you've got one. Sometimes you just want to sleep and take a shower and watch TV and zone out for a little bit.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's people don't understand, like, a through hike is exhausting. It takes a huge amount of effort to complete one.
Yeah, and like you said, like, I mean, some people they're not gonna take care of their body, and they're gonna have stress fractures, and like they're gonna start too fast, and they're gonna overpack and these kind of things, and I think this is why I think my recommendation for people who are interested in starting through hiking and stuff like that, I think they need a better experience on the week hike by themselves, trying their gear and stuff like that, and maybe going for 2 weeks slowly, like building up everything. And not like going straight for, okay, yeah. Because like some people, they try, right? And they are in a time of their life that, you know, nothing, I mean, everything goes wrong, and like, this is not a good thing. They just broke up, and like, no jobs, nothing. They think that that's gonna, I mean, that through high is gonna save their life, and maybe that's gonna work. But for most people, they're gonna put their life in danger, right? And that's gonna be a big mistake. And one of the common mistakes I saw is people thinking that they are stronger than nature, right? They're gonna cross that river, and that the flow is like, the current is too strong, and like, they take a lot of risks. Some people are taking so much, right? And that's the list of things. And I think I'm gonna do a podcast on these things, because again, this is not for teaching people. It's just to making people aware of, you know, there are some risks out there, and you have to take care of, yeah, like you said, your gear, your body, stuff like that. And there are some of the aspect of the thru hike that people only see the thru hike from, let's say, the PCT or whatever the CT is, like from monument to monument, right? But there is an after, you know, the post trail is tough for a thru hike. What are you going to do when you're going to be back home? You know, what is your life after the thru hike? You know, that's a common mistake also, I think, because yes, you didn't know what you're going to go through on the thru hike. And that was like a lot of fun. I mean, like, sometimes that was tough, and it was tough, but there is an after, right?
Yep.
And people don't necessarily think about, you know, what is after the thru hike. And this is tough.
Yeah.
So okay, cool. So that's that was a common mistake. So I think that was a good thing. I took a few notes of this thing, like leave no trails also, you know, these kind of things that people have to be aware of. So that's good. And can you tell us more about like what you're gonna do next? Like quite a few hikes you have in plan. Like what's gonna be your next hike, Salty?
So I'm going to be doing some shorter stuff this year. So I'm going to be living on a homestead for most of the year. I'm, apprenticing at the Wild Abundance homestead in, right outside of Asheville, North Carolina. I wanted a different experience this year than just a hike. I love thru hiking. And I've been doing it for a couple years back to back, basically.
Yeah.
And I needed a different experience. You know, I think people get so wrapped up in the gear. They get so wrapped up in, you got to have this, you got to have that. Well, what I would rather have are skills, different skills, experiences, and a deeper connection to where I'm at. You know, I've spent a lot of time hiking through trails and not having a clue what the name of certain trees are, or sure, knowing certain birds, or knowing, like, people telling me that this is a wild edible plant. And I'm like, yeah, I don't believe you, you know, you know, and those are things that I would like to know. You know, I'd like to be able to forage a little bit while I'm hiking. I'd like to, you know, walk down and know that this tree that I'm standing next to, that this is a rare species of trees only native to this area. And then I've got to think about my life after through hiking, or, you know, if I eventually take a good hiatus, you know, I'm not getting any younger, and my body is pretty well broken down from a lot of the things I've put it through over the years.
Mm.
And I think a lot about my future and a lot about what I want for myself in the future. I don't know if I can necessarily maintain through hiking for the rest of my life as much as I'd love to.
Mm.
I also don't know if it's necessarily the most environmentally conscious thing to do. You know, there's a lot of waste in through hiking that I don't think people address enough. You know, you have to embrace almost the throwaway culture in order to be an ultralight thru hiker. You know, you're going into grocery stores and there's not always a health food store that allows you to buy rice in bulk. You know, you have to buy packages of rice, and then you're taking those packages and putting them in plastic bags, and then you're throwing all that stuff away eventually. And
true.
I go through 4 or 5 pairs of shoes on a thru hike. And once I wear those shoes out, they go in a garbage can and I just throw them away. And I'm not necessarily about that disposable life. I think that we should, as a culture, as a community of people who are so in love with the natural things around us, and we are, those of us who are knowledgeable enough about what's going on with our environment and climate change and destruction that humans are putting on our planet, we need to take a step in the right direction and not necessarily have everything in our backpack be a petroleum-based product, you know, from sleeping pads to our, you know, our nylon Dyneema threaded backpacks to our quilts that have this nylon, you know, coating on the outside and then with chemicals to make them water treated. And, you know, all that stuff is not good for our environment. You know, in the future, if I, my thing right now is footwear. I'm looking for a better thru hiking shoe. I've thru hiked in Ultra Attempts, for the PCT and the CDT, and they were great shoes. Don't get me wrong. The shoes themselves were great. But I think that they are very wasteful, and I think the company itself isn't necessarily doing enough to listen to the needs of its end users. Instead, they're trying to market to what looks good on the internet, what looks good on a cell phone or a website. You know, or what necessarily, you know, their end user for them may just be trail runners. And if that's the case, then I think as a thru hiker, I'm going to start looking for a different shoe. But I'd like to see resolable shoes come back. I'd like to see a shoe that, you know, is going to hold up to the test of time that I might could get one or two thru hikes out of. You know, I don't necessarily want to have to constantly buy a $120 pair of shoes every time I blow one out.
True. Yeah, I agree.
But as far as like my future and like Wild Abundance, like this is going to give me an opportunity to grow as a human being, to gather skills and knowledge that I just don't have and that I really want to learn.
Wow. That's, I have a lot of respect for what you do, man. And, I like the approach and I don't know if that's going to make sense for many people, but I hope it will. And people are going to change in the way they see things. And I think it means a lot to me because when I came back after my sabbatical year in 2018, I didn't want to go and buy everything new, brand new. I wanted to get used stuff and I didn't want to have Wi-Fi in my place. Because I said, you know, I'm going to force myself to go out and just do other things than just sitting around in my apartment and just watching Netflix and these kind of things, you know. And I think the sabbatical year like changed me in many ways and having the chance to, I think maybe we've talked about a couple of things and that, you know, you were part of the 2018 for me and listening to what you say today. Obviously, I'm going to have that thing in my mind, and I know I'm going to think about that when I'm going to be on the CDT, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm very excited for you.
And that's going to be good, man. Like, that's going to be good. But I feel the same about you and, you know, climate changes and what we do and what we're going to leave behind us.
Yeah.
Because
I want to see this planet be around for thousands of more, you know, forever. You know, I don't want to see our Earth continually destroyed by human beings who they're just letting their egos and their greed take it and destroy it. I'm terrified of that, honestly.
Yeah, no, true.
I think that we as a community of people, as thru hikers, you know, people who love, you know, being out there in that world, we need to stop being so selfish and thinking that what we're doing is just us. You know, what we're doing, I go through four pairs of shoes a hike, and that's okay. You know, we need to start taking those steps and encouraging the people who are making these products to start taking those steps to making products that are going to be more sustainable.
Mm. Yeah, true. I mean, like we said, right, there is something after the through hike, and there is something after our life. And yeah, we have to understand that thing, and we have to make sure that, like you said, you know, thru hiking is a good thing. It gives you the opportunity to go through so many things and hiking by yourself and trying to understand who you are. But we also need to understand, you know, what we're gonna leave behind us and what kind of, you know, the next generation is gonna get, and that's a very important thing to me.
Yeah, you should definitely have an episode about pooping on trail.
Yeah, I mean, that's a common mistake, right?
Oh, man.
Also, because, like, on the PCT, I saw people, like, shitting right on the trail.
And I have literally seen people do that.
And I couldn't get it. And I said, like, man, like, if you do that, how, like, the us, just human can survive, like doing these things. Like it's so selfish that I don't know. It's a, I mean, I think we can do another podcast just on that topic, though.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good way also to end a podcast talking about poops. So.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's good, man. So, but I'm glad we finished on the, you know, on that aspect of the hike. And I think people who are listening to podcasts and like thinking about hiking, yeah, they see so many good things and beautiful things on Instagram and all of these things, all of these social networks. But they have to understand that when they go to nature and to a through hike, they can change, you know, like a lot of things, and they can affect, yeah, you know, like the wildlife, right?
Oh yeah.
Wildlife's not gonna be happy about your poop and your the cliff bar, the packaging you left behind you, right?
Disease even amongst the trail, but you know, on the Pacific Crest Trail, you know, going along with the poop topic, on the ice, I quite literally dug up three people's cat holes, like needing to go dig a cat hole. I run off trail, go a good distance away, and I start digging, and somebody else has already used that spot. You know, and that's because, you know, there's so many people on trail that it's becoming a problem.
Yeah, and we don't see that because that we think about, you know, this is so hard to go on the through hike, like you said, and like, I mean, we covered that for long minutes on that podcast, and I mean, we know this is tough and we have to keep going to complete the 2,600 miles and these kind of things. But there are way too many people are doing it. And I don't know, like it's a lot of people who are hiking or attempting a through hike every day. Plus the, you know, weekend hikers, week hikers who are going just for a week. And these people are maybe having, I don't know, it's a different approach. It's tough. Yeah, I'm gonna think of doing a podcast just to tell people this is something they have to consider.
Yeah, it's something to definitely think about, you know, for the future of these trails. You know, with thousands and thousands of people attempting it northbound, the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, the northbound, like, people are pooping everywhere, and that there's a big movement of people trying to get people to carry out their toilet paper or to use alternative sources for toilet paper, like sticks and things. And
yeah,
and that's awesome. You know, and people have got to poop, but you're all pooping within the vicinity of a trail. And it's starting to add up. It's not breaking down nearly fast enough on the Appalachian Trail. You know, there's privies along the way, for most of the trail anyways.
Yeah.
And there are communities of people, there are groups of people that are, you know, going out there and cleaning those privies every single year. But when I started it, that, you know, they hadn't cleaned some of them out yet, and there were literally mountains of poop sticking out of those toilets. And that's, you know, poop is it's a waste product from our human bodies, but it's, you know, we're leaving that behind. You know, you're gonna poop on trail, so you're gonna leave a trace no matter what you do. The best thing you can do is learn how to dig a proper cat hole. Think about where you're pooping. You know, you should be going away, far enough away from the trail and far enough away from water sources and where anybody might be eating. And, you know, carry hand sanitizer. I think a lot of people get sick on trail not because of mice and things. I think it has to do with, you know, not washing your hands.
True, I agree.
You know, it's one of those things, you know, toilet paper. I think people, you know, I'm not a big fan of carrying a lot of toilet paper. I like to use one sheet per day. I've gotten made fun of so much about that when I've showed people what I carry, and like, they're like, you only carry one sheet of toilet paper a day? Yeah, that's for emergencies. that's the case. Is it throughout the day? Like, I look for, like, ooh, that might be good toilet paper, and I'll stick it in my backpack. And, like, I'll hold on to it. And, like, that's going to biodegrade much faster than a heavily bleached piece of cotton, you know? And then I toilet paper just in case, like, there's an emergency and I didn't bring enough moss or something, you know?
Maybe you can use a tortilla, right? And, like, maybe you can wash it in the river and the water source, and then you can heat it then. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I believe one of our friends did that at one point.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
You know exactly who I'm talking about.
All right, man. So, yeah, you see, guys, this is also friendship, right? Like, I just want to tell these people who can listen to that podcast is through hiking is also meeting great people and having a lot of fun and trying to understand, like, you know, who you are and stuff like that, but also, like, other hikers and stuff. And, yeah, it's great memories, definitely. And
you know,
I'm so happy we had a chance to meet on the trail on the PCT.
Me too.
I didn't expect that, to be honest. That day, I was looking for, like, just to give an idea to the people who's going to listen to that podcast, is I was trying to look. I mean, I was looking for a water source, and I couldn't find it. And I was checking on my phone, Get Hooked, the app, and I was kind of, fuck, you know, like, it's supposed to be there. And I saw one guy coming down the trail, and there was you. And you told me, like, yeah, this is not that far. Yeah, you should go this way, and you're going to find it. And then, yeah, we've met this way. And that was really cool, actually.
It was cool, yeah. I was running low on water, and yeah. I had gotten there before you.
Yeah.
And I decided to not, like, I looked for the source where it was supposed to be, and it wasn't there. And I had also looked on GutHook and had the half mile maps with me. And one of the comments was, in a dry year, you may go further down and a spring should be down there. So I followed that creek bed for a good ways. I don't even remember how far it was now. And I found the spring and it was down there and I was very happy to find it. And when I was coming back and I'd just gotten back on trail, I seen Juju sitting there on a log looking at his phone going, the source is not here and I need water.
Yeah, that was a long section. That was a pretty dry section, though.
I say that was right before Kennedy Meadows.
Yeah, Kennedy Meadows. True.
Meadows.
True. Yeah, that was maybe the day before, 2 days before that. That was we were just getting out of the Sierra, and that was funny, and we had a chance to talk and have a few days together, and this is also the good thing about through hiking is, like, meeting great people and having the chance, like, I mean, for years later to just record a podcast together and talk about poop. So that's cool, man. That's cool.
Hey, man, so we got to, you know, we joke about it, but you got to talk about it. You know,
yeah,
if we don't talk about it, people aren't going to learn. People aren't going to think about it. You know, people get so caught up in the YouTube videos and in the Instagram posts. And they see all these people smiling and having a great time. And you know what? There's a lot of that. But there's also some things that people, you know, they don't talk about. And that's one of them.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah. And clearly, like, hiking sounds a lot of fun for most of the people. And most of my friends told me, you know, when I came back, they said, yeah, you know, you had such a good experience. That was maybe a lifetime experience. And that was good. And you had a chance to spend so much time with yourself. And but I told them, yes, in one hand, but in the other hand, like, there are so many aspects that people don't see until you go for a long distance hiking.
Yep.
And then you realize a lot of things. I mean, we've covered quite a few things, and loneliness was one.
Loneliness is a big thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, just being alone. And
and then everybody has a different capacity for being alone. You know, that's something, like I personally, like, my – on other trails where there's always people around, there were times when I wish I had alone time.
True.
Then I had alone time and I wished I had people around. And then on the CDT, I would go weeks without seeing people and I was content. But towards the end of it, I remember feeling like, man, I want to talk to somebody, like wanting to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And like having that conscious thought. And then I've met people on trail before. I remember meeting Northbounders on the CDT who were really late, and they were trying to make it as far as they could. And they, you know, because they were so late, they didn't see anyone and they were very, very alone. And when they met me, they wanted to talk my ear off. And like, I wanted to, you know, be kind and converse with them, but also I was like, dude, I gotta make miles.
Yeah. I have to keep going. Right.
Like, I have to keep going too. And so I'd be as courteous as I possibly can, and I'll talk with them for a minute, and then I just got to keep going.
True. Yeah, that's, I think just about the loneliness and isolation, like, we can do an entire podcast on that thing. And it's one of the aspects that people don't really see about that. And it's very challenging to spend that much time with yourself, because you have to face yourself and you have to answer a lot of questions about who you are, what you like. And finally, you have time to answer some of the questions that are key in your life. And that's a good thing. So I think we covered like pretty much everything. And maybe we're going to do another podcast if I think about something else. And maybe we can record another podcast about, you know, what you've done in the summer. And because I'm thinking also to do a couple of things when I'm going to be hiking the CDT, I can record my voice and I can just download that thing easily when I get in town, or maybe, you know, when I'm going to get a SIM card or stuff like that. So we'll see how it goes. But thank you so much, Salty, for today to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad. Like, you were the very first of my first interview, first through hiker, a very experienced hiker, and a guy who's got definitely an opinion on what is hiking, I think. So thank you so much, and I hope you guys loved it. Stay tuned for the next podcast, and I say just bye-bye, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.